Greetings to the brightest audience in the nation. I am not Jason Troyer, who is not Bob Enyart, who is America's only self-proclaimed right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. My name is Doug McBurney, and I'm sitting in once again for Jason, who is off in Israel with Bob, as a matter of fact, and coming to you this week with the Damascus Road Sunday Sermon. Very interesting topic this week, covered by yet another guest host, guest sermon, guest pastor, if you will, Gordon Carroll, one of the elders at Damascus Road. And he takes us into, you may want to open your Bible, if you have it handy, and I know that you generally do, to Ezekiel chapter 28. And we're going to examine today a few theories about the fall and the very first sin that ever occurred. Where did it occur? When did it occur? Very interesting sermon delivered by Gordon this week. So if you've got your Bibles open to Ezekiel chapter 28, we'll go with no further delay to Gordon Carroll at Damascus Road Bible Church with this week's sermon, The Very First Sin.
For my son in hockey for the last 2 days, so hopefully my voice will hold out. But okay, and thank you everybody for coming. We'll wish everybody well, and we'll be praying for everybody in Israel, and I'm glad that they all made it there safely, and just remember them all in your prayers. My sermon this morning is on sin, but not just any old sin, but the very first sin, the absolute first act of sin since creation has begun. Now, this might seem like a pretty easy, and perhaps even dull topic, but it is anything but. For within the story of the first sin lies mystery, deception, pride, and murder. It's a whodunit of the first caliber. Believe me, Agatha Christie has nothing on God when writing a story filled with intrigue, sinister characters, and action. The only difference is that God's story happens to be true. Now, as most of you know, I'm a deputy sheriff. And since we're talking about the very first sin, and since sin is a crime against God, I would like to look at this as if we were investigating a crime. The crime that we are trying to solve is, of course, the first sin, whatever that was, and our job will be to place blame on whomever we determine the identity of the perpetrator to be. Now, as a police officer investigating a crime, there are certain things we do in order to solve it. For instance, we gather evidence. We talk to potential suspects and witnesses. We investigate the crime scene. Then you combine all that information together, you play it against each other, and hopefully you come up with the truth. Hopefully. So let's all put on our deductive reasoning caps and get ready to solve this mystery. Now, many of you hearing this might think, well, what mystery? We all know that Adam ate the apple, and that was the first sin. So there, mystery solved. After all, we've seen it in dozens of Hollywood productions and read about it in tons of books and articles and children's stories. So what's the mystery? Well, in the first place, Hollywood hardly ever gets anything right. Because if they did, the butler would have eaten the apple. And in the second place, if you say eating an apple is a sin in Colorado, you could go to jail yourself. Because we do have that law against discrimination against fruits and vegetables, you know. But in the interest of fairness, we should note that most Christians would agree that Adam eating the forbidden fruit was the first sin. And there does seem to be some corroborating evidence in the Bible. After all, it is stated in Romans 5:12 that, therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin. And a little later in the same passage, it states that Adam was that man. So I can see why you would say, hey, end of the mystery, it wasn't the butler, it was Adam that did it, case closed. But we haven't looked at all the evidence just yet, have we? After all, Adam does take the stand when questioned by God, and he says he wasn't the first. He says in Genesis 3:12 that the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I ate. Now, that kind of makes the plot thicken up a little bit. Because we see here that Adam is blaming not only Eve, but God also. He is, in effect, saying that they, God and Eve, are responsible for his sin. First, he says that God gave him the woman. After all, he didn't ask for this treacherous little trickster. God just decided he should have her and without even asking Adam. So Adam is saying that it's partly God's fault. And secondly, he says that the woman tempted him. And if the woman tempted him, then that would be a sin on her part. Now, it's not uncommon for a person to try and shift blame when caught red-handed in a transgression. I can remember a time when I arrested a guy on a warrant. And as I took him out to pat him down, I already have him in handcuffs, and I feel in his pocket, I can feel a big bag of something. So I reach into his pocket, and I pull out a bag of marijuana about the size of my fist. And I go, "Ah, what's this?" The guy goes, "It's not mine." And I go, "I just pulled it out of your pocket." He goes, "It's not my pocket." "Well, it's on your pants, so I would think it was yours." So just because Adam says that it's not his fault, that doesn't mean that it's true. He could be lying. But we should at least take a look at his claims and see if they have any merit. So first, he blames God for giving him the woman. Well, God did give him the woman, but he didn't tell Adam to break the law with her, nor did he tell the woman to tempt Adam into eating from the tree. No, he made them both perfect and then placed them in a perfect world with everything geared toward keeping them in that state of perfection. So I'd have to say that Adam's charge against God holds about as much weight as the guy with the marijuana in his pocket saying it's not his pocket. Now, Adam's second charge was that it was Eve's fault. And he says that she willingly and knowingly, and those are legal terms, tempted him to disobey God. And looking at the evidence, I would have to say that Adam seems to have a point. After all, if I were to tempt one of you to do something evil, wouldn't that be a sin? I think so. If I said, "Hey, Doug, that judge was a real jerk to you. I think you should go flatten his tires and put sugar in his gas tank, and that'll show him." And then I give Doug a knife and a bag of sugar, and I kick him out the door in the direction of the judge's car. I think that that would be a sin. Maybe. Given present circumstances. So, we can see the correlation there. Eve gives Adam the forbidden fruit and then tells him to eat. Forbidden fruit, sugar. Eat, flattened tires. Get it? Seems to have a point. Now, that doesn't mean that Adam's not guilty of sin himself, because he is. But we're not looking at just who is guilty of sin. We're looking at who is guilty of the first sin, where it all started. So that seems to show that it might be Eve. So Eve did it. Case solved, and we can all go home. That was fast. But wait, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. Because it's easy to jump to conclusions without looking at all the evidence. A few seconds ago, after looking at a couple of passages in the Bible, we thought it was Adam that had committed the first sin. Then we looked at some more evidence, and it seems to show that the blame is shifting over to Eve, and it could be Eve. So before we decide to make the accusation that it was Colonel Mustard in the observatory with a lead pipe, let's gather as much evidence as time will allow. So where do we start? Now, Hollywood would say to start with the usual suspects. But as usual, Hollywood would be wrong. Because the first thing we must establish is, what is the crime? What is the first sin? Because without a crime, there is nothing to solve. And then when did that crime take place? What was the time frame? Then we have to find out, where did it happen? What's the crime scene? And once we find out where it happened, we can find out who was there. Who was the victim, the suspects, the witnesses? Because the way you get to Mustard in the observatory with the lead pipe is by ruling out the other rooms, people, and weapons, leaving you with only one possible guilty party in the end. So what was the crime? Sin. And what is sin? Well, sin is disobedience to God. So the crime is disobedience. And where did this disobedience take place, the crime scene? Well, Eden, the Garden of God. Genesis 3 is all about the fall, and it all took place in Eden. So unless other evidence comes to surface about a possible alternate location, then I think it's safe to claim Eden as the crime scene. And when did it take place? Well, we know from Genesis 1:31 that at the end of the sixth day, God declared everything perfect. He says in Genesis 1:31, "Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day." So we have an inside time frame. It could not have happened prior to the sixth day. God then blessed the seventh day, and he doesn't say anything bad happened on that day. So I think we could possibly even stretch it to the end of the seventh day. But just to be safe, we'll stick with the sixth day. So now let's use a little bit of deductive reasoning. When did Adam fall? Because we're trying to find out the other end now. We've got the minimum end. It couldn't have happened prior to the sixth day, the end of the sixth day. So we're going to try to find an outside end now. When did Adam fall? Now, he had to have fallen prior to Eve conceiving her first child. Why? Because when Adam fell, all of mankind was in him. And this goes a little bit into what Doug's Sunday School is about. But all of mankind was inside of him. So all of his children would have been under the curse of separation from God, which everyone was. But if Eve had conceived a child prior to the fall, then that child would not have been under the curse. So we know that he could not have fallen after conception. Now, Bob Inyart makes what I think is nearly an airtight case for the actual day that Adam fell from grace as being Friday the 13th, the very first Friday the 13th, as it is. And he goes into great detail to show the evidence that points to it being that specific day that Adam sinned. And he does that in his series, Genesis the Fall, which is available on tape, by the way. And I would highly recommend it to everybody. He goes into details like the fact that both Adam and Eve were perfect. Their bodies were working perfectly. God's commandment to them to multiply. Information on the reproductive cycle. And the fact that there wasn't Monday Night Football. And lots of other stuff. Anyway, get the tape. It's a great tape and it's got all the information in it. So, the crime is disobedience. It happened in Eden on or about the 13th day of the first month of the first year. So who was there? Adam, Eve, Lucifer, and God. Only four possible suspects. Three, actually, because we have already ruled out God, since sin is a crime against him and it's disobedience to him, therefore he's not the sinner. So God becomes the victim of the crime, but he is also something more. He is a witness to the crime. Now, let's get to the suspects. We've seen that there is biblical evidence to implicate Adam as being the first to sin. But from Adam's testimony and God's written account, we find evidence that Eve sinned before Adam when she tempted him. So where does that leave us? Well, back to the evidence. We heard from Adam, so now let's hear Eve's testimony. Because God questioned her, saying this in Genesis 3:13. What is this, God says, that you have done? And the woman answers, the serpent deceived me, and I ate. So, Adam admits that he sinned, but then says that Eve sinned first. Then Eve admits that she sinned, but states that Lucifer tempted her, therefore sinning before she did. Did that really happen? Well, let's look at God's written account of the incident from Genesis chapter 3, where Lucifer says, has God indeed said, and he's talking to the woman, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden. And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent, which is Lucifer, said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Wow. That sounds like sin to me. Unless God put Lucifer in the garden to tempt Eve. Oh, wait, that can't be, because in James 1:13 he says, let no one say when he is tempted that I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. And not only that, but when we read the rest of the Genesis 3 passage, we see that God curses Lucifer specifically for tempting Eve. Genesis 3:14 says, so the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this. Done what? Because you have deceived Eve. You are cursed more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. And on your belly you shall go and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. Now let me ask this. If Lucifer had sinned prior to this, wouldn't he already be lower than all cattle and beasts? Verse 15 states, and I will put enmity, this is still God talking, between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, he shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel. Now why is God putting enmity between Eve and Lucifer? because Lucifer deceived Eve. If Lucifer had sinned prior to this, then there would already have been enmity between Eve and Lucifer, right? Because between perfection and evil, there's always enmity. You can't mix good and bad. They don't go together. They are opposites. So we found that the first sin could not have been committed by Adam, nor by Eve, and certainly not God. We have both the location and the weapon, as well as the date of the crime. But before we make our accusation, let's look at some corroborating evidence just to make sure. Was Lucifer in a perfect state when he was in the garden? Well, in Ezekiel 28:13, God states, "You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. The sardis, topaz, and diamond, beryl, onyx, and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I, God, established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity was found in you." Now there's Lucifer. He's the anointed cherub that covers, made perfect, and he's in the Garden of Eden. So what does that tell us? That tells us that he was there after the sixth day of creation because he's in Eden. And Eden was created separately by God after the world was formed. So we have Lucifer walking in perfection in the Garden of Eden. There's a lot of Christians I've talked to who try to postulate that Satan sinned millions of years ago, or even thousands of years ago, or sometime after the beginning of the creation, but way into the years of that. Well, I think that this verse very strongly establishes that it couldn't have happened millions of years ago, and it couldn't have happened thousands of years ago, or before the earth was formed. Some people will try to state the gap theory where there was a beginning, and then thousands of years later, God created the earth, or he reformed it after it had already been evil and bad, and he had reformed it again. Well, I don't think that it holds water at all. Right here, we see that in Eden, which was created after the earth, God made a separate garden, Eden, and we see that Lucifer walked through that garden in a state of perfection. So I think that that goes right along with our time frame, and it doesn't punch any holes in it in any way, shape, or form. Now, did Lucifer tempt Eve before she fell? 2 Corinthians 11:3 states, "But I fear lest somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ." Well, there you have it in no uncertain terms. Eve was tricked by Lucifer. Now, at the beginning of the sermon, I stated this story was filled with mystery, deception, pride, and murder. The mystery was the whodunit. Now, we've seen the deception aspect. After all, the suspect did say, "You will not surely die." But where's the pride? Well, I left out one thing in solving this crime, in solving a crime, and that's motive. And that's where the pride comes in here, because that's the motive. In Isaiah 14:12, God states, "How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer," Lucifer again, "son of the morning, how you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit." Pride was the motive in Lucifer's deception. God told Adam and Eve not to eat of the tree or they would die. But Lucifer said, "Don't believe God, believe me," placing himself above God. And as for the murder, who was murdered? Well, Jesus Christ states in John 8:44, "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He, the devil, was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. A murderer from the beginning. From the beginning of what? Well, not from creation, because he was made perfect. We've already seen that he walked through the Garden of Eden in perfection. He wasn't a murderer at that time. And certainly God didn't create him to be a murderer. So it was from the beginning of his fall. That's what Lucifer was a murderer from. And who did he murder? Who was it that Lucifer murdered at the beginning of his fall? He murdered Eve. He murdered Adam. And he murdered all of unrepentant mankind. And he did that with his most powerful weapon. And the weapon was deception. Because he is the father of lies, as we just saw. And in Lucifer's sin, we see the threefold connection. We see that there is deception, there's murder, and there's pride. His pride led him into lying to Eve to get her to believe him. And in that deception, once she did believe him, murder was the result because it killed all of mankind. So I think it's time to open our little clue envelope now and time to make our accusation. I accuse Lucifer in the garden with deception. Case closed. He's our guilty suspect. Oh no, I just thought of something. Lucifer was an angel. He was the anointed cherub that covers. And what is the role of angels? Their specific role, when we see them in the Bible, we see them as messengers, but mainly we see them as helpers of mankind. Servants, if you will. And that means that Hollywood was right after all, because the butler did do it. Thank you.
And thank you, Gordon. There you have it. Damascus Road Sunday Sermon, the very first sin. Had you ever thought about that? And have you heard some of the bizarre theories that circulate in some circles about where the first sin occurred? Well, it seems to me that our detective has solved the mystery. And it was Lucifer who actually committed the first sin. And the first sin was pride. Iniquity was found in Lucifer. And it led to murder, as Gordon rightfully pointed out. So I hope that's cleared it up for you. It certainly helped me. And if you want to get that study on when exactly the fall took place, on what day of the week, what day of the year, you get Bob Enyart's album on from the Genesis study on the fall. And it's on the very first tape. You'll learn what day of the week the fall took place. And oddly enough, Bob Enyart comes to roughly the same conclusion Gordon did about the very first sin. I want to thank you for joining us this week at KGOV.com. Bob Enyart will be back in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks from now, Monday, April 9th, about. So stay tuned for that, and my name's Doug McBurney, signing off until I chat with you again. God bless you all.